Hi there, I'm Alistair Madden and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 20 of the Road to Nowhere European Football Podcast. Now, this was the last ever episode of the podcast, and so to bow out, we handed out our alternative end of season awards. To give you a flavour of what to expect, in France we handed out the most predictably underwhelming campaign award, in Spain we handed out the quote of the year award, in Italy we handed out the Calcio Heritage award, and in Germany we handed out the best goal music award. In handing out those and other awards, we looked at Bayer Leverkusen's touch of class, we looked at Pierre Emerick Aubameyang's surprising redemption arc, and we looked at Mallorca's smartest man in the room. We looked at all of those topics and so much more in our usual detailed way. Do check out the show notes for a comprehensive running order of what we discussed and when. This episode is, of course, produced in partnership with Freelance Football Ops. If any of our listeners are freelancing in football, you may be interested in signing up to Freelance Football Ops' subscription-based newsletter. You find jobs which cover writing, design, video, audio, and generally anything in football media every week. For more info, visit freelancefootballops.com or follow at FFOps on Twitter. Right, for the final time, on now with the episode. Hopefully you learn a thing or two, or perhaps even three. Thanks for all of your support, we really have appreciated it. Hopefully you're staying safe, hopefully you're staying well. For one last time, enjoy. Well, for the last time ever, I am delighted to be joined by Michael Jones and Rory Barlow. I'll come to you first, Michael Jones. How are you? How are you feeling on this, the evening on which we are recording the last ever episode of the podcast?
Feels kind of weird. It's almost like that last day of like high school or something, when you actually have a very familiar feel where you've got to like the end of a season or an academic year, and you've got in your head that, oh, well, we'll be back next autumn or summer, whenever it is. But it's like that feeling of your final school year when you still have that almost sense of inevitability that you're going to be coming back and we're going to be doing this all over again. So yeah, maybe I'm going to be living under the false pretenses that we'll be back in the summer when we know we won't be. But I'll have a true awakening come August. What about you, Ollie?
Feeling very reflective is how I would describe how I'm feeling. We spoke at length in our 100th episode about our reasons for drawing the podcast to a close, so I won't dwell on those too long in this episode. But yeah, feeling reflective and feeling proud of what we've managed to do. I'll come to you now, Rory Barlow. How are you feeling, apart from exhausted, having spent the last week or so being extremely busy? How are you feeling?
Yeah, a bit run off my feet, but apart from that, still, it's crept up on me on this episode, it has to be said. It's that kind of prickly uncertainty of kind of ending things into, yeah, the weird feeling where I don't feel like humans really know how to end things properly as a general rule, football being a perfect example, as I'm sure we'll come into with our end of season awards. But yeah, apart from that, I'm good, and appropriate that with episode 101 we should stick RTN into room 101. But yeah, I'm good at it.
Good stuff, Barlow. Glad to hear it. Yeah, you referenced there that we are going to hand out our end of season awards for the four leagues we predominantly cover. And yeah, when we were looking at the agenda for this episode, we thought, what better to start with than League? And so in terms of my awards for League, and the first award that I'm going to hand out is the best redemption arc. And I've decided to award this to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Now, there was another strong contender for this, and that was a club rather than a player. That other contender was Lyon, who have had a quite brilliant recovery after a quite terrible start to the season. Quite how they achieved that, we explored in detail with Nenad, and I think they do deserve another mention here. But as I was saying, the award for best redemption arc does go to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. I think when you think back to how it ended for him at Arsenal, it was all rather acrimonious. And don't get me wrong, he scored a lot of goals for Arsenal, but it was a rather acrimonious split, shall we say. And I think what Arsenal have gone on to achieve post Aubameyang has probably, you know, made a lot of people feel very vindicated. But what Aubameyang has done this season for Marseille is nothing short of remarkable. He scored so many goals. He's been so pivotal to their season. They were so close to reaching the Europa League final, falling just short there. They've had, obviously, not a fantastic season in Ligue 1, but I think with Aubameyang, with his goals, what he's contributed to that team, I think, yeah, he has redeemed himself to an extent. I think when we consider as well how it went for him at Chelsea, that wasn't a very positive environment. And I think as well at Barcelona, Barlow, you probably agree with me, but when I say he really didn't do a huge amount there, particularly when we take into account how much he'd done earlier in his career, especially with Dortmund and at times with Arsenal. But yeah, I think he really does deserve a mention. He scored so many goals for Marseille. He's found his swagger again. And yeah, I think maybe it's not quite a swan song yet, but as he approaches sort of the latter stages of his career, he's definitely redeemed himself, shall we say. Next up, the most predictably underwhelming campaign goes to Strasbourg. Now, we did a deep dive at the start of the season looking at Luko's acquisition of a majority stake in Strasbourg. We looked at what that would mean for the club, the club's identity. We looked at how that news was received on the ground, how the fans responded to that, and what started out as, yeah, already quite a negative relationship between the support and the new ownership, I suppose. What started out as, yeah, quite negative has really soured into something quite toxic almost at times. And I think the fans, maybe at the start, they were willing to give it a little bit of time. The more optimistic fans, the more lenient fans, shall we say. I think certain fans from the get-go were not on board with it at all. And I think what we've seen over the course of the season is a Strasbourg team that has really struggled to find any sort of consistency, really struggled to, I suppose, find its identity. There is almost this sort of existentialism with this Strasbourg team. It's such a young outfit, and it does feel like a team that is not serving the fans, but rather serving an entity over the channel. And I don't think that's going to change next season or beyond. I think is for as long as Bluko are in position at Strasbourg, you're going to have that sort of existentialism. You're going to have that unhappiness. And I think what for me sums up the current mood at Strasbourg was the fact that when they won the derby last night against Metz, or rather on Sunday night against Metz, that should have been huge. You've essentially relegated one of your geographical rivals, one of your biggest geographical rivals, and it just felt to me a little bit flat. Maybe it was different in the stadium, but certainly watching the game, it just felt flatter than it would have done pre-Bluko. And yeah, I think on the whole, this whole campaign has been so underwhelming. They've been, to an extent, they flirted with relegation, then they were flirting with the European places, then they were flirting with relegation again. They've just had a really volatile season, and on and off the park, to me, it just seems like something isn't quite right there. And that's why they've been awarded the most predictably underwhelming campaign. I wish it had been a more exciting campaign. When, for example, Emmanuel Emega signed, I thought, great, exciting signing, but it's just been so underwhelming. And I did raise concerns at the start of the season that it would go this way. I tried to be optimistic, tried to give the Blueco project the benefit of the doubt, but it just really hasn't developed in a positive way at all. Finally, the Game of the Season Award and the Road to Nowhere League and Cult Hero Award. That Game of the Season Award goes to Brest against Rennes. It finished 5-4 to Brest, and that was the game that for me really stood out. Brest have had this fantastic campaign. They've sealed European football for the first time in their history, and that game, yeah, just fantastic value for money. I think Rennes are the sort of team who themselves can be quite chaotic, and that probably lent itself to this fantastic game of football. But the manner of the game and what it meant for Brest on the whole, the fact it was this derby, this northwest derby, I think everything just points towards this game being the best game of the season. Now, it's funnily enough that the second season in a row in Ligue 1 in which we've had a 5-4 thriller. You might remember that Lyon tie last season, which really caught the eye. This time around, we've had another 5-4 encounter. We've had another fantastic game of football. And yeah, the fact that that game involved Brest, who have been one of the success stories of the season, one of the best narratives of the league and season, yeah, that was a fitting match to wrap up European football. And yeah, their manager, Eric Roy, is my RTN Cult Hero Awards recipient. I think when you consider the fact that he'd been away from the dugout certainly for so long, I think about a decade or so. So for him to come back in and to pick up the pieces with this Brest side that was really struggling, and to, I suppose, in the first instance, steer them away from relegation, and then this season drive them up the table towards European football. It is akin to, I suppose, what Steve Clarke did with Kilmarnock, to bring it back to my beloved Kilmarnock. He came in, he picked up the pieces, and he took them to almost unprecedented heights, and all on a very small budget, relatively speaking. I think Brest have one of the smallest budgets in the league, certainly in the northwest of France. In particular, they were competing with clubs who had much better academies, clubs who had much bigger wallets to spend in the transfer market. And so when you take all of that into account, when you take into account the fact that they lost key players, Franck Honorat in particular springs to mind, you do really have to give Eric Roy his flowers. And in particular, we do have to give him the Road to Nowhere League and Cult Hero Award. Okay, on that note, I think we will conclude part one of the podcast. We are going to take a quick break. Michael Jones is going to talk us through the awards for Serie A. We'll be right back. Well, Michael Jones is now going to hand out the end of season awards for Serie A. Michael Jones, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. So I thought I'd begin with a Calcio Heritage Award. Normally, awards like this normally have something to do with off-field issues or something that's happened on the pitch but has been very controversial. And now I'm kind of going to go for the least controversial thing that has happened during our time. I'm doing Road to Nowhere, European Football Podcast, and covering Serie A this season, which is that Udinese are going to spend another season in Serie A. And I guess the slightly more interesting aspect to it this season is that they looked like they were actually doomed for relegation. This is their 29th consecutive season in the top flight of Italian football under the Pozzos. And it looked like their chances of staying up faded away, especially when they made the left field appointment. I think left field is putting it extremely lightly. This is very left field in terms of the appointment of Fabio Cannavaro, who somehow has found some managerial skills that were better than his punditry for ITV during the 2014 World Cup. And he has managed to guide them to a 2-0 win over Udinese. Not over Udinese, that would be really impressive, over Lecce, which looks like it's given them a really good chance of staying up and making it 30 seasons in a row. But the reason why this is so not That interesting, but unremarkable and remarkable at the same time is that since for the last 10 seasons now, they have floated between 12th in Serie A and 17th. 17th only on one other occasion, they got 39 points. They did actually stay up on the last. This is set to be their lowest points haul since then. But that ability to float around lower mid-table is a bit of an art, and I think the Potters certainly deserve some credit. They had a bit of a knack for it when they're in charge of Watford. They didn't have as much of a knack for it when we discussed Granada, and we spoke about some of the reasons behind that success in past years was that scouting network, especially across South America, where we saw like Alexis Sanchez, Touré, Vidal, two to name. There's plenty more that we could name, but yeah, that ability to keep those, to keep this team just floating to such mediocrity in Italian football whilst ambitious teams are coming up and usurping any of their achievements, such as Monza, despite being in Italian football wilderness, albeit with some financial backing. Yeah, I think it's been quite the achievement. So let's hope that they stay up so that they solely for the purpose of fulfilling the justification to received this award so far into the campaign, but it looks like they will. And I think it's also safe to say a team known for rotating managers will be rotating very soon, regardless of what Cannavaro does, because apart from the kind of marketing purposes, this is not somebody who strikes me as a long-term manager, but adds to that long list of former Italian World Cup winners, especially from 2006, who have somehow found a job managing in the top flight. And on that very topic, that leads me to the second award, which I was actually going to put third, but I think it's more fitting to put it second now. And this is the Understated Statesman Award. And I'd like to state that this will be Alberto Gilardino, the Genoa boss, who again kind of fits into that category. He was part of the squad that won the World Cup with Italy in 2006. I remember he scored a goal against Ghana. You may remember him as a prolific striker during the mid-noughties. He was in, I can't remember which Pro Evolution Soccer it was, but I think it might have been Pro Evolution Soccer 4 or 5, where he was one of the best individual players I think you could ever have in a game's history. And anyway, he is certainly a bit more of a diminutive figure, bit more of an introvert than maybe some of the other players who he played around, some of the other greats from his time. And maybe that's one of the reasons he hasn't always been as fondly remembered as some of the greats. Remember, he's part of an AC Milan team that won the Champions League in 2007 as well, rotating with Filippo Inzaghi, who of course scored the two goals in the final. But I think as part of this, he's had this really interesting route where a lot of these ex-big players have kind of, and I've made a big point of this across the podcast this season and before, but it's become a increasing trend recently where they have walked into higher profile jobs that they probably shouldn't have done so. Gilardino's really not actually taken that route. He was managing Siena. You may remember there in Serie A a few years ago, but he managed to guide them back up to the second tier prior to his stint there. He was at a team called Provincelli. So he's had this really interesting, unique and quite likeable climb into the top flight of Italian football. And there he's guided Genoa to a fine introductory season back into Serie A, playing quite good football. Genoa have a host of good young players, but also smart recruitment from across Roma. We saw Morten Thorsby arrive from Union Berlin on loan this season, Emil Bohinen from the Norwegian from Salernitana. I think such a crucial move to Salernitana's hope staying there. But then and Albert Gudmundsson, who has been one of the standout players in Serie A this season, and he's created this quite fluid attacking team that's become really likable for the neutral so far. Aaron Martin as well, who was, I always was quite impressed when I watched him in Germany, Ali. I'm sure he's a player that you might have positive thoughts on as well. But yeah, I think Gilardino has really established himself as a Serie A coach. He's just signed a contract extension to 2026 when it looked like he might be leaving for Fiorentina, where Vincenzo Italiano to leave. So it's a massive boost for them. And I think the hope is for them now is he's spoken about this ability to follow the footsteps of what Bologna have done this season, what Atalanta have done in the past. And yeah, I saw a tweet today from Italian Football TV where they highlighted the work of Giovanni Sartori, Bologna sporting director, another person we've discussed before. And, you know, this is a man who led Chievo to Serie A back in the noughties. He was in charge of Atalanta when they got into the Champions League and now Bologna. So I think any hopes Gilardino has may rely on Genoa somehow managing to get Giovanni Sartori, but I'm sure bigger clubs may be after him as well. But yeah, an understated statesman goes to a man who also saved both of his sisters from a river when he crashed the car, or was in a car accident. So yeah, again, not something that everybody would know, but a nice way to kind of summarize the work of Gilardino. And then, yeah, the redemption arc, a bit of a focus on Italian forwards. There's big question marks going into that, going into this summer. But yeah, the Road to Nowhere Redemption Arc Award, inspired by ULA, was Gianluca Scamacca and Atalanta's attack. They certainly have a big part to play in it as well. Charles de Ketelaere has also had a sensational season and a sensational redemption, all under the guidance of Giampiero Gasperini. But yeah, Scamacca, obviously people may remember, one of the hottest striking prospects in Europe during his time at Sassuolo, had struggled earlier in his career as well. Was actually at Zvola in the Eredivisie. Didn't really on loan. Didn't really do that well there. But yeah, eventually really found his feet at Sassuolo. A lot of Italian big clubs were after him. So were teams in Europe. West Ham under David Moyes, a place for Sebastian Haller, also struggled. Turned out not to be the best location for him, and did score the odd really good goal, one against Wolves, I remember, at my own expense. But yeah, he also struggled when he came back to Atalanta, but found form in the Europa League. And I don't think that was touched upon much during the first half of the season. But obviously, we've seen how crucial that has been now for Atalanta as they're about to play in that final versus Bayer Leverkusen. And I think he may have a part to play. I feel like if there was a team fitting to end Bayer Leverkusen's run this season, it could be Atalanta. He was obviously marvellous against Liverpool when they knocked them out. He went for a run earlier this year where he scored 9 goals in 10 games. And Luciano Spalletti has always been quite a fan of him as well. So, yeah, hopefully it will lead or finish with him playing an important part in Italy's defence at Euro 2024. But, yeah, they're my awards for this season. And, yeah, over and out for Italian football on the RTM podcast.
Lovely stuff, Michael. Yeah, lovely stuff indeed. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back very shortly. Rudy Barlow is going to hand out his end of season La Liga awards. We'll be right back. Well, Rudy Barlow is raring to go. He's itching to hand out these awards. Rudy Barlow, take it away.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I feel like I'm emulating Marca a little bit when they used to give out about 56 different awards so they could get as many of the stars into the building as possible. Shout out to you, Cristiano Ronaldo, for getting a series of quite bizarre awards from Marca over the years when Messi was top scorer or had one player of the year. I'll start off with the RTN Redemption Arc Award. And to be fair to the player who's been given this award, it's not really redemption in some sense. It's more of a kind of glorious return. And that's to Kylian Rodriguez, who we've remarked on during the season. But yeah, captaining a side to come up from Segunda through the playoffs last season after recovering from cancer and going through the whole process, going through chemotherapy and recovering from cancer, getting back on the pitch, the process of about a year that was. He came back at the end of last season to help them through the playoffs. This season, he's led from the front. He's their top scorer with 6 goals, which tells you that they haven't been scoring very many, but he has led them to safety in La Liga again as the captain, scoring some thunder blasters, for want of a word that won't get banned on Indian iTunes. And yeah, he's been an absolute joy for the league. One of the best players in La Liga to watch as well. Really nice and tidy on the ball. Next up is quote of the year. I've got an honourable mention to Jose Bordalas, who earlier in the season said, it's not nice for some teams with much larger budgets, a team like Getafe tried to go and beat them. But as I say to my players, esto es fútbol, papá. This is football, daddy. I don't like using that word out loud. It it sends shivers through my spine, but it was very amusing to watch during his press conference. But the winner is Ramon Bessa, who is a Barcelona-based journalist who said quite recently, I think it was about 2 weeks ago on El Larguero on Cadena Ser, he said, "With Barcelona, you no longer need to set an alarm clock because you feel like you're going to wake up with a fright," which I thought was an adept way of summing up their season and perhaps the last couple of years. There is never a dull afternoon in Can Barça. The Best Tears award for me goes to Iker Muniain, who has brought to an end his very long career. 20 years he's been at Athletic Club, 14 years in the first team. He's been there, well, in the first team since he was 16 years of age, a player that I think most of us will remember fondly as kind of the new wonder kid, the new big thing coming out of Spain. Injuries got in the way of some of the kind of like larger achievements that he could have potentially had. And this season, we saw him for the first time really kind of warming the bench quite regularly. But he came back, he managed to lift the cup for Athletic Club for the first time in 40 years as captain, scored a penalty in the shootout. Just what a story. I mean, the Athletic Club story, I think, is maybe the most significant in Spain this year. I think it's certainly the most emotional or kind of widespread outpouring of joy that we've seen this season. La Gabara, the barge going down the river in Bilbao. It was really something to see, and they talk about kind of 1 million people on the streets. Don't really have confirmed figures of that, but it goes to show you just how monumental an event this was. I think in the Basque Country for Athletic fans, it'll be "Where were you?" kind of moment. Who were you watching with? The fact that the players went out and celebrated on the street with the fans. It was a real event of kind of this is what football's for. This is why we like the sport. This is the sort of thing that you dream of. And Athletic Club did that. Muniain fulfilled the boyhood dream that he had. And he's going out on the biggest high he could possibly imagine, I think. And yeah, you saw him at a farewell event. 30,000 fans on a Monday night turned out to see him at San Mamés to bid him farewell. And he does have the proper tears where you can kind of see his chest heaving, proper blubbering man tears. And yeah, it was something to see. It was really heartwarming in some senses, heartbreaking in the sense that that's kind of the end of an era at Athletic Club, but something that really moved you and moved something within you. And the Best Fan Award is also an Athletic Club fan. That's them doubling up here, and that's to Jon Athanta, or Jon Athanta, as perhaps he's probably known in the Basque Country. And you might cast your mind back to perhaps one of the most famous images of the season, and that was Real Sociedad doing the Poznan, winning the derby against Athletic Club earlier in the season. Backs to the wall, backs to the game. Everyone in that sort of stand seems to be doing it, and there is Jon Athanta smiling. Stood up with an Athletic Club shirt on and just accepting the fact that this is perhaps the worst place he could have been at the time, but still seeming to enjoy it. And that was really quite something. If you haven't gone to seen it, go out, Google it, find it on your social media, because it was a really quite amusing picture. Hottest Seat in Spain award goes to the Sevilla manager seat on that bench, because they are on to their third manager of the season for a second season in a row. And Kike Sanchez Flores looks like he might lose his job at the end of the season again as well, through no fault of his own, kind of. I mean, he's nearly got Sevilla back into the top half. He's making a good go of it, but it looks as if Sevilla want to move on, and it seems that whatever they do, whoever they bring in, it's just not quite clicking, or it'll click for a period and then it'll go. And testament to that is Mendilibar, who obviously won them the Europa League last season and is now in the Conference League final with Olympiacos. Diego Alonso, the Uruguay manager, came and went. He replaced Mendilibar at the start of the season, and Kike Sanchez Flores again has saved them from relegation, but could be out on or on his way out at the end of the season. Most Fun Boss award goes to Carlo Ancelotti, and this was in some senses just a way of getting Real Madrid into this award session, because they do deserve it. I mean, Champions League final, La Liga win, their 36th title, and given that they lost Karim Benzema the 2 years ago Ballon d'Or and basically didn't buy a player to replace him to go out and win La Liga, to reinvent their defence. They were robbed of their two best centre-backs for much of the season. The best goalkeeper in the world, Thibaut Courtois, in my view, also gone the entire season, basically. And to, yeah, find what is almost, I mean, he's lying third in a Pichichi race right now, but almost a top scorer out of Jude Bellingham, who we all knew was brilliant, but nobody really saw him playing as kind of a false nine or a marauding midfielder in that final third in the same way that Carlo Ancelotti did. And Ancelotti, who took the microphone at Real Madrid's title celebrations and said, "I have a dream, I have one dream, and that is to dance with Eduardo Camavinga." And in classic kind of Don Carlo style, says into the mic, "Musica, maestro," like in his really deep, gravelly Italian voice. And off he goes to dance with Camavinga, gets the cigars out. And yeah, you've got a 60, what is he now, 64, 65-year-old Italian man who likes his cigars, who likes his pasta, seems like he quite enjoys the quiet life in some ways. And you have all of these kind of young Brazilian and French guys who absolutely adore him and seem to think he's one of the funniest people on the planet. So yeah, fair play to him. He seems to be a fun boss to work for. Smartest Man in the Room award goes to Javier Aguirre for his antics ahead of the penalty shootout against Real Sociedad in the Copa del Rey semi-final. Real Mallorca have just somehow lasted 210 minutes, through extra time and two legs, conceding just one goal against Real Sociedad, somehow holding out through by hook, crook and blood, sweat, tears, goal line clearances, the lot. And Real Sociedad in their home ground, home stadium, backs against the wall from Mallorca all game. And Aguirre invents this thing that I don't think I've seen before, where as soon as he starts announcing the players for the penalty shootout, he gets them to start cheering again, something that we covered earlier in the season. But he gets them to cheer the names of the penalty takers. And Real Sociedad's players are looking over thinking, what on earth is going on? What's happening here? Why are they doing this? And certainly it got in the heads of the La Real players. It got in the heads of the Mallorca players, who said that, yeah, we stepped up and we knew we were going to win, apart from Sergi Darder, who, credit to him, said when he stepped up, he was absolutely bricking it. So yeah, that was the smartest move that Aguirre could have done in that moment, and almost very nearly took himself to a Copa del Rey final win with Mallorca. The most ludicrous display award goes to Almeria, who somehow second biggest spenders in La Liga this season, in last summer it was at least, brought in a whole load of very, really quite good players, players that are probably going to be playing scattered across Europe's top five leagues in the next few months, and promptly went down bottom of the league, two wins all season, and they've only just got them as they were kind of relegated. So yeah, Almeria, completely ludicrous. They found 101 ways to lose games in just a 38-game season, and really impressive the way they've gone down this season, because they haven't even been that bad. And you look at some of their performances against Atleti, against Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they really haven't been outplayed at all. So yeah, Almeria, credit goes to them for somehow spectacularly messing up their season. The best reason to be grumpy as a nominee. We're used to these awards shows these days, you slip or you flip to the camera and you see the person who has not won with a grimace. Perhaps they've done a very good smile, maybe they've looked happy, maybe they've managed to applaud and give off the good vibes, but inside there's a little bit of a nagging frustration or a feeling of being slighted by the awards or the people handing out the awards. And that should go to Girona and Michel Sanchez, who for this season, who have been pelted with the Manchester City accusation. We know there is the link there, but nobody was giving them pelters for the Manchester City link before this season. And that's because they didn't have a brilliant squad. They didn't have the resources that people accuse them of having now. And they didn't have the kind of necessarily squad to do what they've done this season. And it's only because of Athletic Club in Spain, I think, have robbed them of the galones of the kind of awards and the prestige and the credit, alongside Real Madrid, who have obviously got to another Champions League final. And then you've got Bayer Leverkusen doing the unthinkable in Germany as well, and they're very close to an unbeaten season. And if it wasn't for those teams, then Girona would be the revelation, the story of the season in Europe for me, and still should be at least in the discussion. So yeah, credit to them for doing what is just an unbelievable job. And not only have they done this, not only have they managed to finish third, it looks like, I mean, they could still finish second. They've done so outplaying a lot of teams, playing some of the best football in Europe, playing inventive, ambitious football, fun football, football that people tune in to watch on its own, regardless of who's playing, who they're playing, who's in their team. They seem to play brilliant football all the time. And Christian Porto's Van Basten-esque goal, as it was described against Barcelona, was a pure and kind of notable note to end that section on, or to end Girona's season on to a certain extent. But yeah, Girona really deserve the credit, and I hope that they get it in due course. I hope that people aren't blinded by the Manchester City thing, because the way that they've improved players beyond all recognition, the way that they've plucked players from obscurity, Porto, who I mentioned there, has made a big contribution, and he was kind of a discarded player for Getafe at the start of the season. So yeah, we're not talking about players that were necessarily slated to do what they've done. And people, yeah, they talk about Manchester City giving them players. Yangel Herrera, yeah, fair enough. They have benefited from that link. But who else was trying to sign Yangel Herrera? Who else was taking Yangel Herrera into the Champions League? So, yeah, that's my tribute to Girona. And my honourable mention, just to round it off, to round off the Spain section for Road to Nowhere podcast, is Deportivo La Coruña, who we discussed in the opening months of our podcast. We discussed, I think it was about April time, just as we were entering into the pandemic. We did a big section on their fall from grace, their disastrous drop into the third tier of Spanish football, the financial problems, all the things that have gone wrong with Depor. And things have finally started going right for Depor. They've had a sold out Ria 4 against Barça Athletic this weekend. Lucas Perez, who paid nearly €500,000 out of his own pocket to leave Cádiz in the first division and join Depor 18 months ago in the third tier, and scored the winning goal in that game to win the league for Depor, get them back up to Segunda and going back in the right direction. And they've done so. Now, bear in mind, this is a team that 24 years ago, won La Liga, that won Copa del Rey and got into the Champions League, and they've done so with a record amount of season ticket holders this season, 28,000 at Ria 4 every week. So hats off to them. And that is all from me, Ali.
Lovely stuff, Barlow, and yeah, glad to hear that Deportivo La Coruña are on the way back. Yeah, great to hear that. Okay, we will draw part three of the podcast to a close. We will take another very short break, and then we'll come back to look at the end of season awards for the Bundesliga. We'll be right back.
So for the final section of the final episode of the Road to Nowhere European Football Podcast, we come back to you, Ali. Where else better to end than to round us up with your end of season awards for Germany? Take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Feels quite poignant, doesn't it, as we draw the episode to a close. Well, starting off, my Bundesliga end of season awards is the best goal music, the best Torheim, which I'm going to award not to Bayern Munich and their can-can music, which always felt a little bit patronising, shall we say. But no, I'm going to award the best goal music to Bayer Leverkusen and their goal music, which is Touch of Class All Around the World. This song feels like the soundtrack, and has been the soundtrack, to one of the best domestic seasons ever, one of the best seasons ever. And I think it's given us so many memorable moments. A few moments in particular stand out to me. One of those arguably came at the most important moment in the season, which was when Bayer Leverkusen faced Bayern Munich in Leverkusen, and they won 3-0 to go 5 points clear at the top of the table. That felt like a statement of intent. That was back in February time, if I'm remembering correctly, and it felt like that was the moment at which Bayer Leverkusen really believed that they could go on and win the title. And I suppose Bayern Munich really started to to lose hope, I guess. And at the end of that game, it was 2-0 Bayer Leverkusen. Jeremy Frimpong raced away as Bayer Leverkusen broke away from their own defensive corner. Manuel Neuer was up for the corner. Frimpong raced through, took it past the man brilliantly, and then from a fairly tight angle and from quite some distance out, he managed to clip the ball into the net and put the game, well, the game was already done, I think, but really put the game to bed to make it 3-0 Bayer Leverkusen. And then all around the world came on, and yeah, the music was fantastic. If you've not seen the footage, I think it's definitely worth going and finding that footage. Really quite iconic moment for Bayer Leverkusen, and yeah, that song provided a fitting soundtrack to that moment as Jeremy Frimpong raced towards the Bayer Leverkusen dugout, trying to dodge several players who were trying to, I suppose, knock him over, topple him over in the celebrations. But a fantastic moment. And then in the Europa League semi-final against Roma, to keep that unbeaten run going, it was of course 2-1 Roma on the night by Leverkusen, still leading on aggregate. But there was always this feeling that, having scored so many late goals, that they would find another one and keep this phenomenal run going and find another goal. They did, I think it was, what, the 96th or the 97th minute. And again, just watching that, I obviously not a Bayer Leverkusen fan, but I celebrated that goal as if I was. I was just watching it in my living room, jumped out the sofa, and that music was there again. It does feel like Touch of Class all around the world is the soundtrack to Bayer Leverkusen's quite brilliant season. And so for that reason, I'm going to give best goal music to Bayer Leverkusen. Up next, we've got Most Doomed Striker. And I think this one probably is fairly predictable. I'm going to give it to Harry Kane. I feel so bad for Harry Kane. I say you could almost write the script. You probably could write the script. It just feels like maybe the only way to stop Man City winning the league, although of course they're playing this evening against Spurs, but maybe the only way to stop Man City winning the league is for Bayern Munich to offload Harry Kane to Manchester City. So doomed has he been throughout his career. And again with Bayern Munich, obviously in the Bundesliga, but more so I think in the Champions League, it will be a case of what could have been. I think when we get to the 85th minute of that second leg against Real Madrid, Bayern Munich leading 1-0, and we're all set for an all Bundesliga final at Wembley. And then for whatever reason, Thomas Tuchel takes Harry Kane off. Now, I think Tuchel said that Kane was injured, was too uncomfortable to continue playing, but just, it almost sums up Harry Kane's terrible luck. He comes off and then Hosolu scores those two iconic goals. And as an amazing moment that was for Real Madrid, it really was a quite terrible moment for Bayern Munich and for Harry Kane. And you did feel for him. He's put in individually a fantastic performance over the season. He scored so many goals. And over and above that, I think as well in microcosm, Harry Kane's contribution to the whole team. In microcosm, we saw that with his assist for the Alphonso Davies goal in that second leg. He's been fantastic for them, and yet the rest of the team just hasn't been good enough. And so, yeah, it does feel like Harry Kane, as he approaches the latter stages of his career, I think he's still got quite a few more excellent years in him. But as he approaches the latter stages of his career, as time starts to run out, the pressure is going to ramp up. And individually, look, he's had a sensational career. But to really be considered one of the greats, I think either with England, and that might happen this summer, or with Bayern Munich or whoever, he does need to win a major competition. Whether or not he'll manage that remains to be seen. But yeah, I think he does need to achieve success on a team level to be considered one of the greats. And based on what we've seen with him at Bayern Munich, it does feel like, yeah, he is somewhat doomed when we take into account as well how dominant Bayern Munich had been prior to Harry Kane's arrival. Yeah, it does seem like he's somewhat doomed. And then finally, I've awarded most disappointing end to a fairy tale to Union Berlin. Now, for what it's worth, I think even if they were to be relegated this season, their fans would still be as passionate as ever. Their fans would still love the club, because I think we spoke about it before, regardless of how Union Berlin are playing, that the fans, certainly compared to most other teams, are still so supportive, are still so positive. But it does feel like the fairy tales reaching a rather unsavoury end, at least in terms of performances. They obviously, under Urs Fischer, came up to the Bundesliga for the first time in their history. They then qualified for the Conference League, the Europa League, and then they capped it all off with their group stage appearance in the Champions League. And obviously, at the start of the season, there was this juxtaposition of playing in the Bernabeu and taking Real Madrid all the way until Jude Bellingham broke their hearts very late on. You had that juxtaposition with the Champions League appearances and then the terrible run at the start of the season domestically in the Bundesliga. I think even with that run in mind, it did feel like Urs Fischer had time on his side. He had credit in the bank, but it got to the point where his position really was quite untenable, I suppose, and they had no choice but to part ways. I think the club were quite keen to make it clear that they didn't sack Urs Fischer and Urs Fischer didn't resign. It was a very mutual decision, probably not an easy decision to take, but you had Urs Fischer leaving the club, and then since then they've shown signs of getting back on track, but they now find themselves in real danger. We're recording this on Tuesday, the 14th of May. They find themselves in real danger going into the final game of the Bundesliga season, of slipping into the relegation playoff. And whilst the team in the relegation playoff from the Bundesliga tends to win, that's not always a guarantee. And so you could find yourself in a position whereby Union Berlin sitting there with a must-win relegation playoff. They don't win that and then they're back in the second tier, and you've gone from the highs of the Champions League to the lows of relegation in the space of, you know, not even 9 months. So I think if they were to be relegated, that would be a quite sour end to an otherwise fantastic fairy tale. I think the Union Berlin fans would probably see it differently. They would still see the positives. But from the outside, I think we would probably have no choice but to award the most disappointing end to a fairy tale to Union Berlin. I really hope they don't go down. I really hope that they can stay up and I suppose get back on track. I think they'll need to reassess over the summer, conduct a root and branch review, whether or not they stay up. But regardless, we should probably look at those earlier chapters in this quite brilliant fairy tale. One of the best storylines for us, certainly over the 5 seasons of the Road to Nowhere podcast. And yeah, I do hope that they can steer clear of relegation. Okay, with that, I will draw the episode to a close. I will draw the Road to Nowhere European football podcast to a close. I will come to Rory Barlow firstly for your closing thoughts. Do you have anything you want to add before we say goodbye for a final time?
No, just to kind of what we were saying in that final, well, that 100th episode, to keep in touch to anybody who's been listening. Thank you for doing so. Thank you to you both for accompanying me in the last few years. And yeah, it feels strange, but it feels good. And like you were saying, something to be proud of, something that will stick long in my memory and yeah, will form a part of my life. So yeah, thank you to you both for being a big part of that.
Yeah, fitting words, Barlow, fitting words, and that feeling is 100% mutual. Michael Jones, I'll come to you now. Anything that you want to add before we say goodbye for a final time?
Yeah, well, the last episode was a bit of an echo chamber of each other's thoughts, so I'll try to avoid it a bit, but I do have to thank you both everything really, from just helping out in terms of when we all started, and yeah, I think we've all kind of helped the narratives and what we've discussed develop over the few years. And I think aside from that, just having you both round to talk about all things European football and, you know, football in other parts of the world as well has always been thoroughly enjoyable, and I know that part we'll still be able to enjoy. I think the only other thing I'd say is podcasting is a lot of fun, and with us going, there might be a bit more space for another European podcast to fill our beats or to take our spot. And if anybody's ever thought, oh, like maybe that is for me, I think I'd be really good at this, I'd really recommend somebody to do it. It's such a fulfilling experience, and you know, we won't have ourselves to listen to anymore, so we'll need to listen to something on to get around the football from around the continent that's not just a totally football show.
Absolutely, Michael. Yeah, absolutely. I would echo those words as well. Okay, Rory Barlow, Michael Jones, it has been an absolute pleasure. Dear listener, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to both of you. Thank you to all of our listeners for everything. Stay safe and stay well. For the final time, goodbye.